I want to say thanks to our worship team. I want to take you then to John chapter 20. As we look at some of the appearances of Jesus, or maybe I should say disappearances, another way to say it, because every time you just about capture him, you get hold of him, he's gone. How does he always seem so elusive? How is it that he gets away? So I want to read part of the scripture, I have some comments to make, and then I want to read a little more of the scripture as we investigate the story. Chapter 20, the testimony of John, as he talks about what happened on the dawning of the resurrection. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came early to the tomb while it was still dark and saw the stone already taken away from the tomb. And so she ran. Look at all the action words here, all the verbs. She ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Peter therefore went forth and the other disciple, and they were going to the tomb. And then we're told, and the two were running. I bet they were. They were running together, and the other disciple ran ahead faster than Peter. Some have speculated that he was younger, a little bit quicker. I'm not sure about that. But he came to the tomb first. Somebody has to be first. And stooping and looking in, he saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. And Simon Peter, therefore, also came, and we've never known Simon Peter to be anything other than bodacious. He's always willing to go where others fear to take a step. So here goes Simon Peter. He came following him and entered the tomb. Of course he did. And he beheld the linen wrappings lying there and the face cloth which had been on his head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. And then entered in therefore the other disciple, perhaps encouraged by Peter also, who had first come to the tomb, and he saw and believed. He was and is the first believer. Peter saw, but this one, the beloved disciple, he saw and believed. But Mary, she was standing outside the tomb weeping. So as she wept, she stooped and looked into the tomb, and she beheld two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet where the body of Jesus had been lying. And I'm just going to pause there for a moment. I'll come back and pick up some more in just a second. You know, Jack, when I was growing up, how old are you now? That's what I thought. I think I have that many fingers if I count. 5 on this hand, 3 on this hand, 8? 8 years old? Wow. You know, when I was 8 years old, on Saturday mornings, my parents used to take me to the art museum with my sister, the two of us. I'm not sure it was my favorite place to go. When you're 8 years old, tell me, guys, do you really want to go to the art museum? But my parents wanted us to get culture. So on occasion, actually with regularity, they used to take us to the art museum. That was the thing to do. And I didn't mind it so much because they had some really cool things. You see, when I was growing up, I always loved reading about adventure. And I thought, well, I think Indiana Jones captures it well. You see, I absolutely loved archaeology. And there was a man named Carter who was exploring some tombs in Egypt, and he was the one who discovered what? Anybody know? King Tutankhamun's tomb. That's right, King Tut. So I had read about Carter and his work, so I was excited because one of the places my parents took me to see was the room full of Egyptian artifacts, and they had a few mummies, and I absolutely loved looking at the mummies. Ooh, to understand that these were thousands, not hundreds of years old, but thousands of years old. And one of the mummies even had the toe unwrapped, the big toe, and you kept trying to look and see if you could actually see the toe. It was in a glass case, so you couldn't touch it. But I wanted to, but I was always after that. I wonder if I could see that big toe. Well, I never quite did, but I didn't mind. The mummies were certainly attractive. Well, there was one other room that I really loved, and this was the room that was full of medieval armor. I just thought that was the greatest stuff. You look at the visors and this heavy stuff, and you think about the men of iron and what they were able to do and about jousting, or is it justing? And the personal combat they had with others, and I was infatuated with the armor. Tell me, guys, what boy growing up, or maybe even now, the boy inside you, doesn't want to be a champion? Tell me you don't want to be victorious over enemies. Tell me you don't want to protect the damsel in distress. Tell me you don't want to deliver your people and lead your nation to victory and protect them. Tell me you don't want to do that. So every boy seeing the armor, ooh, I wonder if I could be that man. Could I be the one to wear that and to lead my people to victory? So I love that part of it, but then my parents had to drag me to the art gallery part. And this was the part where they had portraits on the walls. I don't know about you, but after mummies and medieval armor, I didn't much enjoy those portraits. I know they had a few Vermeers and a few Rembrandts and Van Dycks and a few others, Titians perhaps, Raphael, but I really wasn't enthused. I've learned some of those names subsequent to those years, thanks to my parents, but at the time, can we go now? I just wanted to get out of there. Mummies, yes. Armor, yes. Portraits, no. Well, unfortunately, I don't have any armor today to talk about, or mummies. I'm here to talk about someone who's alive and someone who is not dead and embalmed. And what the Gospel of John gives us is a look. He gives us a few portraits in a gallery, pictures, I call them, at an exhibition. And he paints with words these several portraits that he wants to introduce to us. We're going to hear just a little bit about Mary and her experience, her encounter with Jesus, and a little bit about Thomas as well. But when we come to the Gospel of John, what we discover is kind of a gallery of portraits, word paintings of people who encountered and experienced Jesus, the risen Christ. And once they did, all we know is they were never the same again. Their lives weren't just changed. They were absolutely, utterly, and completely transformed. So when we come to the Gospel of John, chapter 20 here, what we find is that John wants to take us on a journey of enlightenment. It's a process. It's a discovery process as he takes us deeper and deeper, closer and closer to an encounter with Jesus. And when he starts to unfold the story, he talks first about the setting, the time. It's on the Lord's Day. It's the first day of the week, and that means Sunday for us. And he tells us that Mary arrived at the tomb while it was still dark, before dawn. And he wants the truth to begin to dawn on us. He takes us through the beginning of a sunrise and an understanding of who this other sun, S-O-N, may be. And as we read these eyewitness accounts and hear the reports, he wants for us to have a dawning awareness of who this Jesus is, because that was the very question with which he opened the gospel. And we've been reading about that in Matthew too. Who is this? Who is this Jesus? And John has an answer, but he takes us gently into the journey. And he takes us back on this first day of the week to the tomb. And then we get to experience first through the eyes of Mary, Mary Magdalene. And when she gets to the tomb that day, when she arrives at the burial ground, she discovers that the stone has already been rolled aside. And it was probably like a wheel that would have been rolled into place. And it might have been as much as 3 feet high, the entrance or so. So it had to be rolled aside. And when she got there, the tomb was empty. We're not exactly told how this happened, but she runs from the tomb, and she somehow discerns that the tomb is empty. And she runs off to Peter and to the beloved disciple. To them she goes. Why those two? Not sure. Perhaps because they were a couple of the lead apostles, the lead disciples. But she discerns that the body is gone and concludes that grave robbers has been at work, body snatchers have taken the corpse of Jesus. And I think she was shocked. So she runs to Peter and to the beloved disciple. She runs as well as do they. And so as you hear John, he takes us a little bit closer and closer to the tomb and to the first encounter. It's geographically, he guides us closer, because you hear Peter coming and stooping, and you hear Peter going into the tomb, and you have them looking at what may have occurred there. So we get closer and closer to an encounter with Jesus. So Peter enters, and he sees what has taken place. Now, the word sees there is a really interesting word, because it isn't just see. It's a word that says he was absolutely intent. He was focused. He was dialed in, laser sharp at what he saw. That doesn't come across in the English. It just says he saw or beheld what was there, but he was focused. He studied every detail of what he saw, seeing the linen cloths laying there as they had been, perhaps, when Jesus was laid in the tomb and absolutely undisturbed except for the head wrapping. And Peter didn't miss. He just soaked it all in, absorbed it, not missing a single detail. After all, he must have thought to himself, this is hypothesizing perhaps, but what grave robber would leave the wrappings behind in place? How is that possible? So I think Peter was mulling it over, trying to figure this out, this riddle. How did this happen? What took place here? And so then the other disciple enters, and he also sees, but it doesn't have the same impact. He didn't study it as intently as Peter does. It comes across as rendered in English with the same word. He also saw, but he concluded something, and he got there first. The first one to the tomb, and maybe because he was the beloved disciple, he didn't need the same kind of persuasion or the same kind of facts or proof or artifacts. But when he looks and he sees the wrappings there, he believes. That's what we're told. And he was the first believer, the very first one. What's interesting after that is that we are told that they did not yet understand the scripture that Jesus must rise from the dead. So for John, if John indeed is the one who is the beloved disciple, no one is absolutely certain of that, but this beloved disciple is the first one to conclude that Jesus has risen from the dead, although they didn't really understand what that meant. And so what did they do after they experienced this at the tomb? What did they do? I love it. They went home. I like that. That's very honest, straightforward. They went home. How many of you were headed home after worship? Okay. Jesus is risen from the dead. Everything is new and different. And what are you going to do? Go home and eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. How normal. They're hungry. I get it. I like that. It just sounds so typical, so common. Everybody but Mary. What did she do? Well, let's go find out what happened to Mary. Let me take you back. Because Mary didn't go home. Mary was standing outside the tomb and she was weeping. Some people think that maybe this is on, as the third day approaches here, that maybe this was appropriate for someone who had died. Just like some families had actually, they did have them, professional mourners who would go to weep. I think it's a lot more than that. For her, it's personal. But there she is. She's standing outside the tomb. And as she wept, she stooped and she looked into the tomb. And she gets a vision that was different than John and Peter, if indeed it was John. She beheld not one, but two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet where the body of Jesus had been lying. And they said to her, as if it's the most obvious thing in the world, "Woman, why are you weeping?" Actually, woman, don't think that is a harsh word. It's actually kind of affectionate. It's a very gentle word that, again, doesn't find full expression in English. But woman, why are you weeping? Come on, guys. You ought to know the answer to this. If you've been human and somebody you loved had died, you would understand why she's crying. She said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." There it is. I do not know where he is. Where's the body? Where is it? What happened? A further desecration? After everything else that's happened to Jesus, all the indignity, now you add insult to injury. Where's the body? What have you done with it? And when she had said this, she turned around and beheld Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus. How can you not know that it was Jesus? Unless there's something very different about his appearance. Unless he looks entirely different. She doesn't know. Or maybe her eyes were filled with tears. I don't know. But she didn't recognize him, didn't know who it was. Jesus repeats that question, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And then asked a further question, "Whom are you seeking?" He knows. She's on a search, questing. Supposing him to be the gardener, she makes a mistake of identity here, and yet, all the way back to the Garden of Genesis, isn't God indeed the gardener? We'll leave that one alone. But supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." Now he relates. He names her. She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Well, it means more than that. It means dear teacher. Again, it's a term of endearment, of intimacy and affection. Dear teacher. Jesus said to her, apparently something has taken place in between, "Stop clinging to me." I love that image. What's she doing? She's probably wrapped him up in a big bear hug like David does, with the kind of hug that David would give me. Knocks my glasses off, my buttons pop. That's David. It's one of those bear hugs. I can just imagine it. She just wraps him up. Jesus, you got away once before. Now that you're back again, I will never let you go. And so Jesus is kind of funny, really, kind of humorous. Stop clinging to me. I don't know what she was doing, but stop clinging to me. And then he says more, stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. He's on a journey back. And he says it so gently, I would imagine, to her. But go. He gives her an assignment. Go to my brethren, my brothers, and say to them, I ascend. And here comes the real wallop and the impact. And I think this makes all the difference. I ascend. I'm on my way to my Father. And here it is. The tomb is open, the way of life. And to your Father. There it is. My God and your God. Wow. No distance anymore. Jesus always said that our Father, well, he taught us to pray that way, but until this moment, he's simply reiterating what he has always known and said, the door to intimacy and relationship, the same kind of Father relationship that Jesus had as the Son, is now open to us. My Father and your Father, my God and your God. And Mary Magdalene came. She took the assignment, announcing to the disciples, I have seen the Lord, and that he said these things to her. She was the first one to see. And he gave her an assignment, and she carried it out faithfully. And a little bit more here. When therefore it was evening on that day, Sunday evening, the first day of the week, and when the doors were shut where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in their midst. How did he get in? And he said to them, peace be with you. And those are powerful words because they were afraid, and they needed to hear those words, that reassurance. Peace be with you. And when he had said this, he showed them both his hands and his side, not his feet, hands and side. The disciples therefore rejoiced when they saw the Lord. They saw with their own eyes. Jesus said to them, therefore again, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I also send you. And I actually want to fast forward down to verse 24. Because there was one of their member who wasn't there. Verse 24, poor Cheryl trying to keep up with me. But Thomas, one of the 12 called Didymus, or the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples, therefore, were saying to him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I see in his hands the imprint of the nails and put my fingers into the place of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. Apparently, he needs a little bit more proof. And after 8 days again, his disciples were inside a week later, and Thomas with them, Jesus came, the doors having been shut, and stood in their midst and said, peace be with you. Once again, that reassurance of peace, shalom, which is a comprehensive form of peace. Peace be with you in the midst of your fears to address your needs. And then he said to Thomas, reach here your finger and see my hands. And reach here your hand and put it into my side and be not unbelieving but believing. Because he didn't believe the report of the testimony of the other disciples. Thomas answered and said to him, my Lord and my God. And that's the first confession, or shall we say profession of faith, the very first. My Lord and my God. And Jesus said to him, because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are those who did not see and yet believed. And that's for us. Blessed are those who weren't there at the tomb. They didn't hear their names called. Not then. They didn't get to see with their own eyes. They didn't get to touch with their own hands. Blessed are those who do not see and yet believe. Many other signs, therefore, Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but have been written so that you may believe that Jesus, who is he, is Messiah. He is the Christ. He is the Son of God. And that believing you may have life. That's what it's all about. That you may have Zoe, life in his name. Abundant life, the kind of life that Jesus offered. Well, this is a powerful story. And Mary is weeping and wailing. And I love what she gets. It goes beyond what Peter saw and what the beloved disciples saw. She gets a vision of two angels. Who wouldn't like to see that? That's pretty persuasive. And yet, they don't understand, or they seem not to, as they lead her along the path closer and closer and closer to Jesus. What are you looking for? Why are you weeping? Leading questions. I know Easter is like that for some people. It's like it was for the beloved disciple and for Peter. They come on Easter, they take a peek inside the church. One looks and leaves, another looks and believes. I don't know why. Some people get a breakthrough, a revelation. Others, I'm not so sure. All I can say is that on this particular day, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's not good grammar, but I think it describes what took place on that Easter Sunday. So we get this gallery full of portraits at an exhibition, witnesses, several to the appearance of Jesus. And we need to be honest and say there were no witnesses to the resurrection itself. Nobody was there. Nobody saw him return to life or explode back into life. But what we do get is personal appearances as Jesus in person, in the flesh, appeared to a number of people, to Mary, to Peter, to the beloved disciples and others, live, Jesus in person, in the flesh. Notice that he first appears to Mary as an individual, then he appears to the group. Poor Thomas wasn't there at the time, but he appeared to a group of them. But notice something else. Everyone that he appeared to was a disciple. These were all followers of his beforehand. Yes, the works of Jesus were evident to the crowds and in public, but everybody who received an appearance was somebody who was already a believer, already following him, already a disciple. It was to the insiders, to many of us, that Jesus revealed himself and made himself known. All we can say is that Easter vindicates the faith of those who were already following Jesus, and they were the ones to whom he appeared. Now, Paul goes on to tell us in 1 Corinthians that Jesus appeared to many witnesses. He tells us that he appeared to Peter, to the 12. Notice that he set Peter aside. He distinguished him from the others. Peter, perhaps because Peter was one who denied him. And to the 12, to more than 500 at one time. And then says Paul, and last of all, to me. 500, more than 500 at one time. Years ago, I was in a worship service, and there was somebody who asked, and as I recall, it was a woman, interestingly enough. It was Mary who first gets the encounter with Jesus, but it was a woman who said, may I borrow the microphone for just a second? And then she said, I see Jesus. He's here in the building. And this was several hundred people. So she said, and so the pastor wisely asked, well, where is he? And she said, right there. And then somebody else stood up and said, he's right there. Somebody else could see him too. I don't know about you. I was like many of the others. I'm like, where? Where? Let me see him. Where? I only wish I could have seen what they saw. But actually, I did see something that was pretty interesting. I couldn't see Jesus, but as people, there were some in the room who did, or at least they testified that way, as Jesus walked among us and moved around. What I could see, though, is a light. And every time somebody said, he's right here, I could see a light right there. I don't know what to make of that. I don't think I've ever told anybody that. It was a strange and wonderful experience. But I don't want to make too much of the experience. I'm more concerned about encounters with the living Christ, but it was a very interesting experience. Persuasive in some ways, I don't know what to say. Why, I wonder, though, when Paul talked about the witnesses, did he not mention Mary, especially if she was the first? Maybe it's because women were not considered reliable witnesses. Maybe. Maybe it's because the testimony of women was not admissible in court. Maybe, in a court of law, women were not allowed to testify. I'm sorry about that. But guess who got the first appearance? Mary. I think Jesus tries to undo, perhaps, what were some of the wrongs in that particular culture or understanding. And Mary was the first one who went to testify. All I can say is that Peter thought something was up, and so did the beloved disciple. When she said, they've taken the body away, they went running to the tomb. So they believed her word, and it was two of them as well. And it takes two witnesses. Maybe that's why Paul didn't mention it. Or maybe it was because Jesus was thought to be just too a little bit too close to Mary, or that she was too close to him and she made people uncomfortable. I'm not sure. All I know is that she was one of the last ones at the crucifixion. She was one of the very first to return. And her faith and devotion, her love and admiration for Jesus were rewarded. She was the first one to whom he appeared live, in the flesh, in person. Her love was rewarded with the very first appearance. It wasn't for Peter. It wasn't for the beloved disciple. It wasn't for the 12. It was for Mary. And how incredible is that? It may be that Mary was not one of the boys, not one of the 12, but she certainly was a disciple in every sense of the way. And she was one who was faithful and who returned early on that Easter day to watch, to wait, to wail, to mourn. And she was there and one of the first to find Jesus again. See, I think I was tempted to give a little title to the message today and call it Disappearances, or for appearances' sake, reflecting the ambiguity of everything that happened on that day. What we can say, after all the encounters that took place, is that those who witnessed the resurrection of Jesus, they were different. There was something different about them, and they were never the same again. Notice the disciples. They were fearful and afraid. They were hiding. Well, on the day of Pentecost, everything changed. They were no longer fearful, but they were ferocious. They were bold and daring. They weren't afraid to speak up anymore in public and to say, "I know Jesus." And the first to do that was Peter. Something has changed in that man. They went from cowardly to courageous. They went from, what's the word, pusillanimous to puissant. Something happened to them. They were transformed by their experience. They went from denial to becoming powerful defenders of the faith. So whatever happened to them, it absolutely changed them. What happened? Well, we get this lineup of witnesses from John, the author of this particular gospel. And even though there was no one there to witness the actual moment of resurrection, he gives us a few clues that would have been valuable in court as testimony. And they point to the truthfulness about the resurrection and the validity of it, the veracity. They talk about an open tomb and an absent body, and the grave clothes were there undisturbed. How could that happen? And about the people who saw Jesus risen from the dead, and then the lives that were changed, as perhaps being the utmost witness about the risen Christ. And so there were things that happened to each one of them. And what I love about this particular story is that there's no one right way to come to faith. It's different for the beloved disciple than it was for Mary, and still different for the group, and then different for Thomas. It was different for all of them. When you look at Mary, what I like about her particular experience is that even though she looks in the tomb and gets a visitation from angels, they don't quite do it for her. Why are you weeping? Because they took him away. And then even Jesus, she doesn't quite get it even then. It's only when he calls her by name that her eyes are opened. When she hears the voice, then she knows. That's what it takes for Mary. All it takes is the voice, the one who calls her by name. And then the disciples, well, you get this whole group of them together, and they're hiding out for fear. Anybody watch AD? Carlo, you asked that. Why were they hiding? Well, if you've watched AD or read the book here, you know why they were hiding, because some of them were being hunted. They wondered where the rest of the followers of Jesus were. Could they be guilty of inciting insurrection or rebellion? Well, they were in trouble, so there was good reason for them to be hiding out. And when Jesus comes to them, I love that. The one word he speaks to them is a word of peace. Peace. And that was something that they needed to hear, and Jesus knew it. Perhaps in the midst of their need, that was the one thing that they needed to hear most. And it was the one thing that Jesus offered them, peace. And then he showed them what? His hands, the marks, and his side. And they were persuaded. But who wasn't there that day? Thomas. Poor Thomas. So a week later, he had heard the reports, "Thomas, Jesus appeared to us." And he's saying, I don't care. Unless I see it for myself, unless I can put my fingers, my hands in his hands, and my hand in his side, I'm not going to believe. So he gets the opportunity. He actually doesn't get much that the other disciples weren't offered. But Thomas, he needs a little bit of proof, a little more persuading. He wants to touch and feel. How many of us aren't like that? You know, they always say seeing is believing, right? How many of you have heard stories? Your children come home and you say, "Where were you last night?" And they give you a story and you're like, "I'm not buying it." Well, here's Thomas. You know, Thomas was always down to earth, practical. Jesus, before he had gone to the cross, said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. If you have seen the Father, you have seen me." And so Thomas is the one to pipe up and say, "I don't know the way, Jesus. What are you talking about? What's the way?" So you have to love Thomas. And I love his nickname. His nickname was? Oh, yeah, Doubting. Well, it was the twin. Now, how many of you have ever felt like two people? On the one hand, I believe, and then the other hand, I don't believe. Well, Thomas, I think, is two people. He's like over here in disbelief. I'm not going to believe it until I see it and touch it for myself. Doubting Thomas. And when Jesus arrives, he speaks to him and he says, what? Peace. And then I don't know if it was gentle. I hope it was. He says, be believing. He says, he kind of rebukes him for not believing and for having to see instead of just trusting the scriptures and what he had said. Why didn't you believe the testimony of the others? But Thomas, well, I think there's hope for all of us because we haven't seen with our own eyes, but these words were written for us. And we believe that the testimony, these portraits that are given to us are reliable, trustworthy. They're like witnesses in a court of law. It's about the character of the people who are put on the witness stand to give a testimony. We're not trying to really persuade anybody. We're just saying, this is what I know, this is what I saw, this is what I encountered. Could this be the truth? So we get this whole portrait. I'm running out of time here, so let me just wrap up with this. We get Thomas the twin. Wouldn't it be something, and why do we always call him Doubting Thomas? Why couldn't you also call him Trusting Thomas? Because when Jesus shows up, what happened to Thomas? What was his confession? My Lord and my God. Now think about that. The others didn't say that. Mary didn't say that. She said, my dear rabbi. Does she have a breakthrough? Well, a little different, and I don't want to say that she didn't, but here's the first confession. And he says it so boldly, my Lord and my God, he's got it right. So you see, John keeps taking us deeper and deeper and deeper into a deeper relationship with Jesus, closer and closer to a resurrection encounter of our own. So he gives us this whole gallery of portraits, this whole gallery of witnesses to the resurrection. So I brought this one. We get to hear about Mary, what happened with her, and there's hope for us. I think, because at first, she doesn't know who it is. Thomas doesn't know who it is. The other disciples don't know who it is. But John, the author of the gospel, says these things were written for us who don't get to see and yet believe. So I brought this along. I wonder, you see, it's empty right now. We have all these witnesses testifying to the resurrection, testifying to the risen Jesus. Could they put your portrait in here too? If it were pictures at a gallery, portraits at an exhibition, would they put your portrait in here too? What do you say about Jesus? To what can you testify? Peace be with you. Blessed are those who do not see and yet believe. And if you haven't seen, then I would invite you to take a look at the scriptures and pray a very simple prayer. Lord, if this is real, make yourself known to me. You did it to others. You did it for Mary. You spoke her name. You did it for Thomas and you said, touch. But notice, we're not told that Thomas did touch. He was invited to. I don't think he even had to touch. Once he heard Jesus, he was invited to touch, but there's no evidence that he actually had to. Jesus said, go ahead, put her there. But all we hear is that Thomas goes from there to his profession of faith. My Lord and my God, just hearing the voice of Jesus, encountering him was enough. So my prayer is for you, that all of you will encounter the risen Christ the way that Mary did, the way that Peter did, the way that the beloved disciple did, the way that the disciples did, the way that more than 500 at one time did, the way that Paul did, the least of these, he said, the way that I have, the way that Carlo has, the way that Donna has, the way that Jenny has. My prayer is that everybody who meets us will see Jesus. Carlo, I don't have time for the last song. I'm just going to offer a blessing if I might. Jesus spoke it so easily. He said, peace I give to you, not as the world gives do I give to you, but my peace give I to you. Do not let your hearts be troubled, Do not let them be afraid. Believe in God. Believe also in me. For I go ahead of you to prepare a place for you, and where I am, I will come and receive you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. May the peace of our Lord Jesus Christ, the love of God, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with you now and always. Amen. Go in peace. Join us downstairs for refreshments if you are able.